Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 Minute Drill on the program.
We're going to kick it off in Cleveland with our good friend Munch Bishop from Fox Sports 1350 and on those Guardians pre and post stuff too. Munch, we're not going to start with the Guardians though. We're going to start with the Browns. What's the feeling up there with this Deshaun Watson news that it looks like could just be a 6-game suspension for the much maligned quarterback?
You know, overall, I am pleasantly surprised because people are horrified that the suspension was only 6 games. One of the first things I heard was, you know what? Brady got 4 games for deflating footballs, and what can you say? So the NFL, a league that's trying to appeal to women and trying to gain women as followers, well, guess what? You really don't mean much more to us than a football does. But the bottom line is NFL has 3 days to appeal. I expect them to appeal, but on the other hand, you know what? Put it this way. Baltimore put a statue up to somebody involved in a double murder. I saw black women wearing Ray Rice jerseys. So anything can happen in the world today, my friend.
All right, Munch, I saw the statement here from Jimmy and Dee Haslam. It says, we know Deshaun is remorseful for this situation that has caused much heartache. I haven't heard remorse from Deshaun Watson.
That's why I love doing your show, and that's why Kansas City's lucky to have you. No, it's more BS, and I'm going to say it, from a Confederate who has robbed millions of dollars through his pirate flying J company, as he said, from inconsequential small businesses. No, he hasn't been remorseful. To this day, he says he has done nothing. Well, you know what? If he's done nothing, then why is he settling these claims? So, Ren, what do we have in this life? Whether it's you and I, you know, producer Adam or anything, we have our reputation. We have to look in the mirror at night. And I always tell people that when I speak to groups, especially high schools and colleges, is that that's what we have. And you know what? Innocent men maintain their innocence. It's just so important. Yeah, no, they do not settle these cases, all right? No, he has had and shown no remorse in any way, shape, or form. If anything, he continues to say, I did nothing. Curious, I wonder when his lawsuits against SI.com or the New York Times are going to happen if he did nothing.
Yeah, I hear you there. Munch, what do you think about I saw Kevin Stefanski speaking last hour. Did anything come out of that that was notable?
You know what? No, not in any way, shape, or form. You know, here's what's interesting, too, and I like Kevin. Kevin's a good man. I do not know this for a fact, but if anything, somehow, and I've called him the Rasputin of the Browns organization, Paul DePodesta and his laptop seems to have a lot of say-so. He's not supposed to be having any say-so in personnel matters. Well, I have a feeling he popped his laptop open on this one. And something tells me, too, that Andrew Berry, who was part of the Three Stooges or Ship of Fools with Sashi, Andrew, and DePodesta, is trying to make good on not taking Watson back when he could have had him with the 12th pick overall. Oh, he did a pretty good job by turning Watson's pick into Jabril Peppers and David Njoku. So it's a mess. It's still a mess, and as long as the Haslams are in charge of the ship, it's going to be a mess, my friend.
All right, so the Cleveland Guardians are just a game out of first place. The trade deadline's coming up. It's a big week. Buy, sell? What's it going to be here for the Guardians?
They are not going to sell. I know that Framil Reyes was a name being bandied about, but, Seren, come on. What do you give for Framil Reyes? I don't think a heck of a lot. I was hoping with Arizona in town that the pitcher Davies, who's tossing tonight, against the Guardians, and the first baseman winners could be had to just walk across the concourse there and move their lockers to Cleveland. We have to remember this, and you can look at the prices being paid by some teams, especially, you know, Seattle getting Prawler for Cincinnati. They're giving up prospects. Well, I can give you 3-4 prospects of any team that have failed for one that has made it, so they're only prospects. You could do that. You're not even giving up top 30 prospects to get some of these guys, too. I do look for the Guardians to make some type of move. And Philadelphia is interested in Zach Plesac at 2-9. They feel it's part of the environment that it would enhance him to be their fifth starter. So we'll see. They do look for them to make a move by 6 p.m. tomorrow, the trade deadline. Now, who's off Kansas City by tomorrow at 6?
Well, we don't know. Maybe Whit Merrifield, maybe not. They could be stuck where they are. Maybe Scott Barlow. We'll see. The level got set today with the Josh Hader trade, and Barlow, it's a pretty steep price they paid for Hader. Barlow's not that, but I don't know if someone's going to go out there and pay that for him. We'll see. If the Guardians stand pat, can they win this division?
Yes, they certainly can. But think about this. With everything that's gone, and I know the Twins have been ravaged by injuries. The White Sox have been ravaged by injuries. It's part of the game. Well, so have the Guardians. They're one back, and there's a lot of foibles on this team. They're still making some mistakes that young players, people say, well, young players make them. No, they shouldn't. Sarin, I've always said three things you should do as a pro. You should throw, you should catch, you should run, okay? The hitting and pitching makes it a little bit tougher, but sometimes they're not even doing the three easy things. Yeah, they can win this division. They'll have to get into the season, so I guarantee you the wild card is not coming out of the Central.
Munch, thanks for your time today in Cleveland.
Brother, honor and pleasure always to be on your show.
Let's check in with Brian D. now from WTMJ. Big trade today. Did you guys see this coming with Josh Hader getting shipped out to the San Diego?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Lebo. I think we saw this coming at some point, but we were all a little caught off guard that it happened this year. Now, the reason we saw it coming at some point is because Josh Hader was going to be an unrestricted free agent after next season. So the Brewers were never going to pay him what he was going to command on the open market. So he was either going to get traded this year or next. It was surprising that it happened now because the Brewers are in first place. They're 57-45. A lot of folks think that they are going to win the NL Central Division and storm into the playoffs once again. And their pitching is the strong suit, right? Whether it's the starters of Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff and Freddie Peralta coming back, and then their bullpen with Devin Williams and now formerly Josh Hader. So I think the president of baseball operations, David Stearns, who joins our show once a week, we talk to him all the time, and I think he would tell this, and I'm curious to ask him on Thursday. I think his mentality is, we were going to have to do this anyway. We got a guy back in Taylor Rogers that's leading the league in closers, so we're not significantly hurting our ability to win this year, and we're restocking the prospect pool. The really head-scratching part, Lebo, is that they're doing this with San Diego, a team that they might have to go through in a couple of months in the first round of the playoffs.
The other side of this that you don't know what you're going to have until it happens is, what do you do with the clubhouse here, right? How was Hader in the clubhouse? Was he loved? Is it just business and people don't understand how that goes? How do you think that'll work with the guys in the clubhouse?
So I think it's an important point that you make up that David Stearns and Craig Counsell are super smart. Counsell was obviously a player in Major League Baseball for two decades. They have a good thumb on the pulse of how the locker room is going to feel about this. And I think that's why you're probably going to see the Brewers make some sort of other move between now and 24 and a half hours from now before the deadline. Because I think even though they're bringing back Taylor Rogers, who's going to kind of plug that role as the closer despite some struggles since the end of the month of May, and they brought in some guys that may or may not be able to contribute at some point in the not-too-distant future, I think the guys in that locker room and that clubhouse feel like, look, we could win it this year. Our starting pitching's good enough. They've been clicking on offense since the All-Star break. So this type of move screams sell, right? Like on paper, if you're just reading the headline, it screams that the Brewers are selling, which is weird for a first place team. So I would be surprised if we don't see some sort of other move to address the lineup in the next 24 and a half hours, in part to do the thing you're talking about, which is to ease some mind to the players in that clubhouse.
Now, the Brewers are the team that fired Ned Yost in a playoff stretch too. The Brewers do some things, man. I get it. All right, let's talk a little Packers here. Davante Adams is gone now, right? What have been the reports so far? Marquez Valdez-Scantling is down here with the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. What have the reports been so far of the new wide receivers up with the Packers?
Yeah, it's kind of been a clunky start because of injury. Alan Lazard, who's expected to be kind of the number one to fill in the void for Davante Adams, which is something you can't do. He's Davante freaking Adams. But he's going to be the guy that kind of takes on all of those targets, at least in the early part. He's been fine. Beyond that, though, Sammy Watkins started training camp injured. He's finally back now and playing a little bit and getting up to speed. Christian Watson, their second-round pick that they traded up to get at the top of the second round, has not practiced yet after in training camp after suffering a knee injury at the end of OTAs. And then it's a list of other guys, right? Amari Rodgers, one of their mid-round draft picks from last year out of Clemson. This kid Romeo Doubs out of Nevada has been impressing a little bit, but is he just a training camp star? Potentially. Juwan Winfrey, another name that's popping in practice, but I don't know that we're any closer to solving who's going to fill that void than we were a week and a half ago.
With Watson, he's pup right now, right? Is there fear that he could be lost for the season?
No, I don't think it'll be a season-long thing. Basically, what we know about that injury is he tweaked something in his knee right at the end of OTAs before the summer break and had a little minor procedure, and they're expecting him back at some point in the not-too-distant future. The problem is, as a rookie coming out of a place like North Dakota State, every single rep with a guy like Aaron Rodgers and building that trust is valuable. And the more training camp practices you miss out on, the closer we get to the preseason, it's just more lost opportunity for a guy that was expected to have a big-time role for this offense.
Brian D. in Milwaukee, thank you for your time, buddy.
Anytime. Happy to have you. All right.
Then I'm up in Chi-Town.
Who's up in Chi-Town? Mark Carman's up in Chi-Town. That's what I know from WGN. How you doing, Carm?
Lebo, what a thrill. Awesome to be with you, my friend.
Good to talk to you, buddy. I'm going to ask you a not nuts and bolts question first. What do I keep seeing about where the Bears are going to play football eventually? Where is this settled yet? Are they moving to the racetrack? Are they going to try to put a top on this thing down by the lake? What's happening?
So I'm the only person in Chicago, Ty, with any real integrity who appreciates Soldier Field, who appreciates the lakefront, who doesn't care how stupid a dome would look on that ridiculous structure, just knows in his heart deeply that the Chicago Bears belong in Chicago. I don't care if the San Francisco 49ers don't play in San Francisco. That's them. Be the Chicago Bears in Chicago. But yes, they're going to buy this place, and they're inspecting the land in Arlington Heights, and they've got a millions of dollar contract to do everything that they can to find the best way to go forward. And that's what's going to happen. They're going to move to the suburbs, build their own stadium. They don't own the stadium in the city. So I think ultimately they will be moving out, call it 2026, 2027.
But the city's not going down without a fight, right?
They're not.
You sound resigned that this is happening.
Yeah. Well, look, there was a lot of bad blood for a while between the city and the Bears. And Lori Lightfoot, I mean, I thought it was hysterical. Like, she's, was saying things along the lines of, maybe they could actually win some football games before they, have such and such. I'm like, Lori.
Well, you're not helping.
but now she's floating a dome at him for $800 million to $3.2 billion to try to keep him down there. Now, is she doing that because 2023 is an election year, and she knows deep down they're going to go, and she's just trying to make herself look good? That's kind of how I really feel that why she's going so far into this. But hey, call the bluff, Chicago. You don't the Bears' money, the McCaskies who own the Bears, their money is with the team. They're not like Mark Cuban, who's got billions and billions of billions. Their money is actually the Bears. Of course, the Bears are worth $4 billion, but if you're not selling them, like, to build the stadium that they got to build, I'm not exactly sure how creative they have to get to do it. I'm sure they could figure it out. But there's got to be some part of them that's like, okay, we don't have to spend all this money, and they're going to build us this billion-dollar dome on the lakefront. Maybe there's something appealing there for the Bears, and I give that a 3% chance, but that's what I'm hoping.
How about on the field? Are they going to win some games, Carm? What's going on here?
Lebo, they have one of the worst rosters I've ever seen. Their schedule has a lot of winnable games on there. Atlanta and Houston and Detroit twice. And so there's some winnable, like Miami, whatever, Tua may stink, all that. So there's some winnable games, and maybe Justin Fields takes a big step forward, and maybe Matt Eberflus, with all his accountability, will be a zillion times better than what Matt Nagy was. Couldn't be any worse. But their offensive line stinks. Their receivers stink. Their running back is a good running back, but he's not, I don't know, let's keep it in Chicago, Walter Payton in his prime. Their defense, you have one guy who can get to the quarterback. They're shallow at linebacker. I do like their young safeties. Feels like 4 to 5 wins to me.
All right, the Cubs are bad, right? So we're not going to talk about that. The White Sox are right there. I saw this clip a few weeks ago with Ozzie Guillen lighting up Tony La Russa on the postgame show. I've seen Tony La Russa continues to walk people in odd positions when they're like down in the count doing these odd things, but they're just a game back. What's going to happen as we approach the trade deadline here with the White Sox?
So I've said all along that, you know, Sox fans have just been having meltdown after meltdown. Like, they're right there. The division's not running away, and they have the most talent, and they'll probably make an addition here. And Steve Stone's been saying that they got to credit the guy because, like, whoever, this is the general manager's division, who's going to make a move, Cleveland, Minnesota, Chicago, who's going to make the right move? And that'll ultimately stamp who gets to go to the postseason. I think that's probably spot on. From what I've heard, the White Sox are interested in Jose Quintana, who, of course, the former White Sox and Cub, for that matter, has had a good year with the Pirates, and Noah Syndergaard as well. So there's two names that might land in Chicago. So pitching, and more. I mean, and a reliever too. I think the Cubs and Sox did two reliever trades last year: Ryan Tepera and Craig Kimbrell. You could potentially see that again with Michael Givens of the Cubs, who's going to be going somewhere. The Cubs are trading out their whole bullpen. So it could be an all-Chicago thing again there.
Are people lining up right now outside of Guaranteed Rate Stadium to watch the Royals play there tonight?
Oh, my God. It was amazing. When I drove by 35th and Shields, first of all, the amount of Royals fans who have come up for this one, I was stunned. The blue and white, it was amazing. I thought somebody had McGonagall's and Stroud's and Okie Joe's, whatever. Okay, I just want to throw
Joe's KC now. They call that now. So
okay, my bad. Yes,
you
yes.
Switch
yes.
the name.
So is LC still rolling?
LC's is still there. He did actually pass away, but he's still there. The food is there. It's great still.
That's so good. Bring me back. Let's go. But yeah, no, this one. Hey, listen, they're all must wins for the White Sox right now. It's not a must win to wait. Let me walk that back. But the White Sox got to get hot, and this part of the schedule softens up, so no time like the present for the Sox right now.
So everything's going poorly. What's happening? Is anything going good? I mean, the Bulls exciting you, and the Blackhawks weren't very good last year. What makes you happy right now?
That's a great question. I mean, my tennis game is strong, so there's that.
But always.
Chicago sports right now is in a significant lull. There's really – I mean, the Bulls are going to be a playoff team, which is a lot better than they've been since – call it 2015, 2016, when Derrick Rose was still running around and Jimmy Butler had a moment with Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. So they're better, but no one is sniffing any championships anytime soon in Chicago. So the way it is.
Well, thank you for bringing us up, Carm. I appreciate it. I hope the Bears stay in town for you. That's what I want.
Hey, for all of us, man, give some credence to how the way it once was. The Bears belong in Chicago. Come on, this is not hard.
That's not hard at all. Hey, Mark Carman, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Todd. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota. Moving on to the Twin Cities, Matt Coller from 1500 ESPN 1500 in Minneapolis. Let's hit what's going on in training camp. The NFL is king everywhere. What's the Kevin O'Connell regime been like so far in camp?
Yeah, I think that there's just an overall different vibe. I mean, Mike Zimmer went into, I think, maybe three straight seasons as a hot seat candidate. So there was a lot of tension around training camp in recent years. I mean, especially last year, where vaccination status of these quarterbacks became a really big topic right from the outset of training camp and kind of put a damper on everything. And then at the end of camp, they played starters in a preseason game and lost the key starter, Irv Smith Jr., for the season. So, you know, I think that Kevin O'Connell is maybe doing some things smarter, like managing player workloads. As far as how they're actually looking, the pads come on today. So it's kind of hard to say, like, how they look as an overall offense and things like that. I do know that, you know, they're bringing over a lot of Rams stuff, and there's more three wide receivers, and they're opening it up in the passing game, and that's been pretty evident early on, and I think that does play to Kirk Cousins' strengths, but there's always kind of the thing hanging over the organization of, like, how long will Kirk Cousins be here? Can he actually produce more than he has in the past in terms of wins? You know, are they kind of playing a dangerous game with, you know, extending Kirk to keep him here rather than taking the reset button approach? But I think from Kevin O'Connell's standpoint, he sort of struck all the right notes that everybody wanted to hear after Mike Zimmer had made it a very tense atmosphere in recent years.
Yeah, O'Connell is going to call plays, correct? I mean, he's an offensive coordinator. He didn't call him out the Rams, but he intends on calling him here at least to start. Is that the vibe?
Yep, that's right. Yep, he's pretty much going to have complete command. Wes Phillips is his offensive coordinator, so he'll kind of be the Kevin, like what Kevin O'Connell was to Sean McVay. And that's, you know, that's another big storyline. It's like there's a lot of things that you have to deal with as a head coach that you never realize when you're an offensive coordinator. And I think Kevin O'Connell will have some bumps along the road when it comes to, you know, game management, managing players, managing adversity, which every team goes through. And this team, I think, has a particular, disposition toward a lot of drama in its history. I mean, go back and look at, you know, Brett Favre or roofs collapsing or kickers missing kicks or whatever. It's not easy to be the head coach of the Minnesota Vikings. So I think as it goes along, we'll see how he handles that adversity. But at least from the start, I think that players like what they see with what he wants to do on offense.
You tell me if you think this is a decent analogy. It feels to me like maybe the Vikings and the fans and the organization are where the Chiefs fans maybe were with Alex Smith, like 5 years into the deal. He's good, right? You make the playoffs, you're never going to be awful, but it doesn't feel like you're going to be a Super Bowl contender with him at quarterback. Is that a decent analogy?
Yeah, it is. And I think the thing about that, with them sticking with Kirk through this year, was partly because there wasn't a quarterback to draft, as we ended up seeing, that everybody, you know, outside of Kenny Pickett, went in the third, fourth, or fifth round for all the quarterbacks that we spent time talking about. But I do think that they see that, and Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the GM of the Vikings, I think that his comments about Kirk Cousins sort of indicate that they see that. But, you know, I would also say put some respect on Alex Smith's name in comparison. Like, look at, and I know QB wins are a thing that gets people huffy on the internet, but, like, look at the success that Alex Smith had in the regular season versus Cousins, who's won zero divisions since being here. He's won one playoff game and has appeared in one playoff game or in two playoff games in the same year, one playoff in 4 years as one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. So at least with Alex Smith, he was winning a lot of games and routinely in the playoffs and giving you a chance to go somewhere. And still Kansas City said, you know what, he's not going to be worth paying. We need the rookie quarterback and we need someone more dynamic, which is another big part of that conversation, is that the Vikings have just made a bad bet with paying a middling quarterback as much as they do. I believe Cousins has the third highest cap hit in the NFL this year. Like, that's just not a winning model to have, and that was a big part, I'm sure, of the Alex Smith decision, was just the price tag for him. So I think that Vikings fans do view this as very likely the last year of Cousins, unless he and Kevin O'Connell become the best friends in the world and they go to the NFC Championship. But I think anything less than a great season probably results in Cousins not being here.
And for our fantasy football people, I mean, Dalvin Cook was a workhorse for a while, but it looks like its time has kind of caught up to him. That happens with running backs. What do you expect out of that running back position and Cook in particular this year?
Well, if you like receptions, I'm not a huge fantasy player, but I know that there are leagues that give you a lot of credit for running back receptions. I think he's going to get more. I think that they are going to adapt his role a little bit to, you know, increase the screen game from where it was last year, to line him up into different places, and maybe to reduce his workload. So if you are a fantasy player, maybe you're not getting the 250 carries, but you're getting 60 catches instead out of Dalvin Cook. But the risk you're always taking, and after year of this, I think it is worth calling it a trend, is that Dalvin Cook will come out of the gate on fire, and then by midway through the season, he's at three-quarter speed because he's got whatever injury that he's dealing with. Last year, he played the final stands of the season with a sling on his arm. I mean, that's just, you know, kind of what Dalvin Cook's career has been so far. I think he's a risky player to take in fantasy, but also, you know, with everybody, whether it's Justin Jefferson or Dalvin Cook or, you know, their backup running backs as well, it's kind of a big question here of how will they use these guys differently than Mike Zimmer did in the past?
Yeah, that'll be the thing to see. We're talking to Matt Collar in the Twin Cities. All right, Royals fans have checked out on the season because they're awful and they're in last place. You look up, and the Twins are still in first place. It's been a little rough week for them. Trading deadline is right here. Are they going to be active? And do you think the Twins have what it takes, even if they stand pat, to handle this division and make it to the postseason?
Yeah, I don't think that they have what it takes as their current roster. I mean, all you have to do is, if you go to the, standings page, you just move your finger up to the football mode, the AL East, and look at the New York Yankees, or if you go down with your finger and go to the Houston Astros, I mean, you're just not competitive with those teams, right? They are far and away better than you. And I don't think that there's one trade that they could make that you would say, all right, now you're going to make up the 200 runs and run differential or whatever they're behind the New York Yankees. I think they're just kind of a middling AL team that is in the right division, as you mentioned, with Kansas City and Detroit. And, even Chicago is just kind of, under expectations. So it's been a big debate here. Do you try to make a move and go for it when you're that far behind the two top teams in the AL and in the mix with so many other teams of similar strength? Or do you just kind of let it play out? Or do you sell? Because there are people here that are arguing, look, I mean, there's no point to keeping, certain players that might be on the trade block. So, it has been a big debate. It will be interesting to see what they do. If I had to guess, I'd say that they kind of go half measure, get a little pitching, and that's probably it.
And it's been a surprising year, though, a pleasant surprise, right? They were supposed to be about a 500 team. It looks like they're going to be better than that unless it falls apart.
Yeah, I mean, it was looking that way until recently.
Right.
Because now, I mean, you say they're supposed to be a 500 team, and if you look, they've kind of creeped back toward that. It was like they had this hot run where they won a bunch of games, and everyone went, wow, okay, maybe this team is something. And then as the bigger sample size has played out, they have been – it's kind of a Minnesota trend to be mediocrity in the middle. The Vikings deal with it a lot. The Timberwolves are a first-round-out team, and it's kind of frustrating for fans to have that, where you get that excitement of oh, look, they've won X out of X games, and they're a super excited team, and then they kind of come back to earth over the last few weeks.
All right, one last one for you here. I was clicking around on Saturday. I turned on the MLS game, and Minnesota was in this insane game. Ends up being 4-4. Crazy. You don't see 8 goals in soccer. Just overall, where they've been around, for 7-8 years now, is it registering in Minneapolis? They had a really nice crowd out there. They've got a soccer-specific stadium. Do people enjoy the soccer up there?
Yeah, I think that it's kind of MLS teams everywhere. I mean, some probably have where they make the front page of the newspaper all the time, but I don't think that's the usual case. It's a very, very aggressive fan base that's not big. It's not like an NFL fan base or Major League Baseball or NBA, but extremely passionate to the point where, I mean, if you go to the stadium, it's a great experience. The fans are super into it. The same people are there every game. Kind of like the WNBA is here with the Lynx, where they have a very, very passionate fan base, and it's definitely been adopted. It was something that I think everybody knew that when we added an MLS team that it would be like this, and that's kind of come to fruition. But I went to a game, I think it was 2 summers ago, because then, the COVID thing and everything, but the experience is just fantastic. I mean, I think there's no crowd really in sports like the MLS crowd.
Matt Coller from ESPN 1500 in Minneapolis. Thanks for the time today, buddy.
All right. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
All right, the good sense. End of the hour answer. I could use a good sense right now. I could really use a...
It just makes good sense.
Little oven roast chicken, double meat.
You could use a whole.
You don't even need the double meat anymore.
Use the whole.
More. Yes, use the
whole.
We
don't talk enough about intern Cougar's summertime good sense sandwich is the meatball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That bothers me. I love a meatball sandwich in the winter. Don't get me wrong.
Me too.
But you got to go cold cuts when it's 100 degrees out, I think. Mm. And they do that well, too.
They do. I think a meatball sandwich is good anytime, but I would,
yeah, it's like chili. I mean, I made
you
chili
gotta
last night.
Not that's, order the same thing every right. time. You gotta have Dude, a different order for different.
I have basically two orders. I go meatball winter, original in the summer.
Then you do. When is your winter? Is it? Do you have a? Is it? I mean, is it the astronomical
or
winter, or have you got another date?
Whenever the weather is a little. I don't
opening
have an exact
day,
date.
Is opening day the end of winter?
I don't have an exact date. If we get a 40-degree day in April...
That's winter still.
I'm getting a meatball sub, yeah. You know something, and I'm sorry, we got to get to this, but I'm very excited to share it.
We don't have to get to anything.
We
got
They've got, as Sarin has mentioned very often, their loyalty program is incredible. Let me tell you this. My parents do not have a loyalty program account with GoodSense. I do. Every time they go to GoodSense, which is often, they just put it on mine.
Yeah, see? That's right.
It's, let me tell you.
That's better than sharing passwords on something.
I'd agree with you.
Good stuff, man. Absolutely.
So the question, how many Colorado Buffaloes are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I first guessed two because I thought someone else might have snuck in there. The answer is just one, correct? The
answer is one.
Cliff Branch.
Born on this date, Clifford Branch.
I love Cliff Branch. As we all know, I loved the Raiders when I was a kid. I love Cliff Branch. And
Cliff Branch should have been in the Hall of Fame long ago.
He was the,
there's no way he should have been in, I think, 20 years after Lynn Swann. They were essentially the same player, but Swann played on a better team.
He was one of the first guys, and now it's cool to wear the low numbers. Yeah. He was in before you had to go the high numbers. You got the low numbers on that wide
that
receiver
a,
thing.
He was a cool, I mean, Cliff Branch.
Yeah. He was good. Then no one else from the Buffs.
Nobody else.
Hmm. They got anyone?
I'm looking down their list of career weighted approximate value after Cliff Branch, who was number one.
Is it Tom Ruin, the punter?
Chad Brown, linebacker.
He's a good player.
He's a three-time Pro Bowl, two-time All Pro. David Bakhtiari, I guess he's got an outside shot. He's got some years to go, but he's been
Ted Johnson a Colorado Buff too?
Stan Brock, Boyd Dowler, who was a Super Bowl winner. Dick Anderson won two rings. Mark Haynes.
Not everybody could get on from that team.
Yeah, Mark Haynes, no. But that's about, you can kind of go down the list. Cordell.
They had some guys who were really good college players and had fine careers in the NFL, but not quite Hall of Fame level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah. Loved Cliff Branch when I was a kid.
I think it must be just a phenomenon with kids, people my age, because myself and a lot of my contemporaries, like, we remember Cordell Stewart being, like, really damn good.
Oh, yeah. Not Hall of Fame good.
But it's funny because I remember him just being like, maybe it was just because I was comparing him to what I was having to watch in the Chiefs uniform playing quarterback.
Yeah.
But I remember Cordell Stewart being
They had really good, like Kanavis McGee and Alfred Williams and guys
who were
getting those guys. And obviously, like you mentioned, Chad Brown was good too. And they had a lot of good wide receivers too. I mean, but they were like a little bit better in college than the pros. Like Michael Westbrook was a star in college and was a guy in the pros.
Bill McCartney just flooded the NFL for about 5 years.
Yeah,
from
lots of positions.
From 92 to 96 or so. It was everywhere.
Both sides of the ball. Linemen.
Offensive line, Jay Lewenberg.
Yes.
They were
Nate
studs.
Solder.
Nate Solder.
He wasn't a Bill McCartney, but he was a guy who's won some rings and who knows.
Eric Bieniemy.
Heard of him? Yeah.
Those Colorado teams, only the greatness of Nebraska kept them from
winning more.
Winning the title.
They got a half of one anyway.
Had a chance in '89, lost to Notre Dame, and then got it back the next year. Phantom clip, some Notre Dame fans would say, on the rocket.
No, Notre Dame never gets the whistle to go their way, so I totally understand. Hey, our 100-year celebration is getting closer by the day. It is now August. Mm-hmm. August 11th is the date. Right now, caller 8, tickets.
It's a week from this Thursday.
Caller number 8, pair of tickets. Not telling you the number. If you don't know the number, I don't like you. You got to know the number to get the tickets. Royals news today. Still no trades yet. Big trades for the Royals as this trade deadline goes along. But what have we got going on today, Curtis, as the Royals are in Chicago to face the White Sox?
A couple of one roster move. Is Daniel Lynch, who had been on the injured list with a blister on his finger since the 17th of July, has been reinstated. He will start tonight for the Royals in Chicago. Brad Keller has been moved back to tomorrow, and who was going to pitch tomorrow has been moved back to
another day. So Lynch is up. Yeah, that blister.
Brady Singer has been moved back to Wednesday.
It popped up on him. It was a weird thing with him, and he couldn't get the bleeding stopped that one day, and hopefully they got that figured out. He had not had those issues very much before, so hopefully that's figured out. But he's going to start tonight.
Hopefully he's not Jeremy
Affelt.
Affelt.
Never could figure
have
it
that
out.
Issue.
Yeah.
He'll start tonight. Carlos Hernandez has been optioned to AAA Omaha. And Bobby Witt Jr. is out of
tonight's
lineup.
Was I supposed to know
lineup?
That Carlos Hernandez was on the team right now?
I had forgotten about that.
Okay. But he's been optioned now.
He has been optioned. Bobby Witt Jr. not in the lineup tonight. It is not to do with him getting hit in the hand yesterday. Apparently, he was cleared on that front. It is part of their process in easing him back into action from the hamstring tightness.
Right.
So he's not going to play every day. He played every day he was available over the weekend, did he not?
Yeah, well, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday, games, so it's two games. But yeah. And he was maybe making a strategic move on one of his ground outs, kind of looking over and seeing where the ball was. Okay, I'm not going to pull this all the way out, but I think they're probably going to give him a day off here and there until they're 100% sure. But
Salvi's behind the dish. Whit Merrifield is in the lineup. You know, this will be the night when you're looking around. Does someone get taken out in the fourth inning? Are there hugs? You got hugs in the dugout.
Like there were in Baltimore.
There have been big trades so far. Big trade between the Brewers and the Padres. They flopped closers. Yankees have made a big move for Frankie Montas. Mm-hmm. This Mancini trade is a three-way trade.
It's a three-way deal. Yep.
With Baltimore, he's the linchpin of it. He goes to Houston, but some other players have moved around.
Houston gets Mancini and right-handed pitcher Jaden Murray. Baltimore gets right-handed pitcher Seth Johnson and Chase McDermott. These all sound like made-up names. And Tampa Bay gets center fielder Jose Siri from Houston.
Siri. Right?
Yep. I remember when
spelled
he
just like that.
He spelled that way.
So the Orioles, we were talking last on Friday. We had Baltimore on the drill. I'm like, pretty big weekend for you here to figure out if it's buy or sell. They've lost two in a row. I guess maybe that indicates sell. I mean, they're in that wild card hunt, but you got to have some reality, right? You're three back in that, but you're – yeah, I mean, what are the – I guess you don't want to give up playoff chances, but if you got a chance to build and they look like a team with a future, they're much better than they thought they were going to be heading into the year. So a couple losses get you sell time. I think this is just fascinating where all these teams are right now with this deadline coming tomorrow. This AL Central race is really wild. We got three teams winning the game of each other. I don't think anyone – we just checked in with two of the cities, all three of the cities on the drill, and I don't think anyone's super excited about the fact that they're going to go do anything.
Yeah.
I'll add, whether it be Baltimore or the teams in the Central, I agree. You don't want to punt on the chance to go to the playoffs.
Hey, the Royals ain't punting on any playoff chances. I know that.
No. But if you are Baltimore, you could look at it and go, well, you know, the last time we made the ALCS, that same year the Royals, that was the year when Yankees, Red Sox are down this year, but the typical powers were down. Mm-hmm. So it is legitimate to go, well, do we want to risk making the playoffs this year and likely just be fodder for either the Astros or the Yankees, or do we want to build for something where we'd be capable of winning 96 games and maybe latching on to a year where the Yankees aren't as good as they were in 1998?
It's timing is what it is. You know, it's just all timing. Like, where are you when you are? And I still maintain that in 17 or whatever it was, the Royals were just too close. Mm-hmm. And then they made that trade. But we all kind of thought that Cleveland was way better. And they ended up finishing 20 games out.
Yeah.
And, you know, they make these trades. So it's tough, man.
That 14 team had not done really anything to that point. But they were coming off a year that made you think they were going to. So there was more reason to believe that there was something happening in April, August, and September.
But the Royals in 14, they didn't do anything. Really.
But they didn't sell.
Yeah, they were.
Even though they didn't have a track record, winning 86 games in the previous year made them think if we can get there, we're set up to win in the postseason.
Right.
And this is more legit. When you come out of nowhere like Baltimore did, there may be a feeling of, we're 51-51.
We ain't
supposed
to be here.
And the run differential isn't bad. They're minus. The run differential is better than the White Sox.
Yeah, it's okay. White Sox are minus, right?
Yeah, they're basically where they should be based on the run differential.
Right.
But we're not really sure. This is not the team.
Don't chase it.
We didn't expect to take this team into the postseason. We're ahead of schedule. Let's kind of build for the years coming on, and that will be better down the road because I don't think they believe that they're going to be any kind of major player. If they could guarantee getting to the postseason, I think they might not be.
If you're holding your over
ticket, there's no guarantee.
If you went out to Vegas and threw the over out this year on the Orioles, you may have already cashed it. I mean, they're like way better than – well, you probably haven't already. It wasn't that low. But, I mean, you ought to feel pretty good about where you are there. So they're way outperforming, and this is that time where you got to kind of figure out, had they won – you know, swept the series this weekend, and maybe you're like right there. Maybe you do, like, not make this trade. I don't know. But I mean, like, where the Royals are right now, if you can make a trade, you got to make the trade.
Guess who has the worst run differential in American League?
At the Royals?
By a run.
Yeah.
Over the Tigers.
Well, they're fighting for nothing.
Yeah, right.
They're fighting for nothing.
The Royals moved, stayed just a half game back of the Tigers.
Well, that's the crazy thing about the three teams up top in the Central right now. You know, with the two awful teams in the Royals and the Tigers, they just haven't – no one has distanced themselves against each other. When you look at their records, those top three against each other, they're all – game or two within 500 of each other when they play each other. No one has said, we're way better than these other two. That's why they're all sitting there, and it will be a very weak playoff team. Now, maybe they'll just get hot and go. Maybe the White Sox will realize their potential and turn into something in the postseason. I'm not holding my breath, though.
Doesn't seem like it. And it kind of highlights the thing we just discussed earlier is that, you know, one of the issues, one of the other teams has kind of been – they hit the postseason the same time the Royals did after a long gap was the Pirates. Now, they didn't win a game. They kept losing in the wild card game at home. But they're in a rebuild, and there's some thought around Pittsburgh that it's great to have O'Neill Cruz there, the freak show shortstop, but how much does it mean? Because the owner doesn't seem to be willing to sink any resources into the team. So they're going to have him up and waste these great years while they fiddle around at the bottom of the NL Central or baseball in general, and they currently have the worst record in the division, the second worst in the National League. And they're going to waste all these years. Well, could you not possibly see a similar situation? Fans going, are we going to waste the Bobby Witt years with that? Mm. Now, they have put a little bit more into the Pirates have, but one of the things that came out of this story that I was reading about them was that the NL Central is a division that's up for the taking for a while.
I mean, the Brewers are making trades. They're in first place.
They don't have the big money teams to just kind of take off like the Mets and like the Dodgers have. That's the situation I think the Royals have had in the American League for a while. Is you may not be able to knock out a monster team like Houston or New York or whoever in the postseason, but the Central has been very winnable for a few years, and they've really made no moves toward winning it in those years.
Not yet. Looks like Shohei Ohtani won't be traded. That's the reports out there, but we're still waiting on this Soto trade. If it's going to happen, I don't know, man. That's going to be a haul if it does. Trading deadline will be here tomorrow. We will talk at 5 o'clock hour. A lot of football. We got Need to Know. We got Bob Glauber still coming on the program. Welcome back into the program. I'm Todd Lebo in for Stephen St. John. Oh, no, in for Seren Petro. Stephen St. John, we had him on earlier. His back is wrenched. He got himself an appointment. Got a doctor's appointment here at 5:45 today. So the people have come and have given him the information he needed.
Yes.
So we'll see if that fixes him. See, or Stephen could be down and out. I don't know. We'll see.
Down
we
and
need
out
to go. We need to go get him George Jefferson to walk around on his back. Like he used to do for Bentley next door, right?
Right.
Stand on his back.
Do the dance?
He'd try. I mean, he'd try about anything, you know. He'd give it a shot.
When you're in like pain, you're like, just do something.
Yeah.
Drive your car up on my back. I don't care.
I have
anything's worse. Anything's better than pain when your back hurts.
Not had back issues. Makes me very happy. I haven't. I haven't had many.
But
yeah.
For a guy my size, you think I would have had more? But man, when it happens, you're just like, all right, I'm done.
And I don't always laugh at Steven when his back hurts. Just one time.
Just one time.
When he tippy-toed up against the wall at Chiefs media availability, and I took a picture and I sent it out to people. One time. He says I do that all the time. I don't do that all the time. Not all the time.
Just sometimes.
But he went to practice today hurt, and he'll hopefully be awake tomorrow and do the show hurt and get to practice tomorrow hurt. We need him up there. Doesn't matter if your back is broken. Spinal. It doesn't matter.
What do you mean? You mean your back like vertebra? That's a
spinal. That's what we mean, Jim Gray. All right, we got 1 hour left of the program. We will tell you what you need to know next, brought to you by our good friends at Jungle Law. And we've got Bob Glauber ready to talk some NFL. A lot of stuff going on in the league. This league stuff is pretty interesting with Deshaun Watson. I'm sure we'll get into that as we move along. And good to talk to Bob. Haven't talked to Bob yet. Football season just getting underway. Yeah, love Glauber. And we got the kicker for you. Have you come up with a good kicker yet?
Not yet.
No?
I got a while.
Someone going to come up with a kicker? Why don't one of you interns come up with a kicker?
Yeah. I got some.
All right. Ethan's ready. We'll see how his SportsCenter goes. We're going to grade this. Are you guys going to ever do a sports center together? No, they're not. Don't mess this up. We're all counting on you, Ethan. Program continues next.
All right, how many Miami Hurricanes have rushed for 10,000 yards in the NFL? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana Kitchen.